recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James, along with Pastor William Fink, with another installation of the Christogenos Show. And we're going to be continuing our series on the book of Isaiah. Last time we left off at the end of chapter 46, and we'll be beginning with chapter 47. Before we start, Bill, do you have any comments on last week's show or previous things that we might have overlooked?
Well, off the top of my head, because I didn't prepare anything in advance, that the Isaiah 42 through 46, or especially through 45, that there's several things that are very important in those chapters.
Okay.
First, Yahshua Christ is Yahweh come in flesh. Isaiah proves it beyond all doubt. Second, the message of the gospel of redemption, which Isaiah preaches, is absolutely exclusive to the children of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And third, Yahweh challenges us in Isaiah 4, in those chapters. And he makes a statement that, you know, to let our false gods tell us what has happened in the past and reveal the future,
mm-hmm.
which Yahweh does through his prophets. But none of the false gods can do that.
Right. Right. And they haven't either. Certainly his prophets have made unbelievably accurate prophecies. And, of course, those can only be understood through the Christian identity message. It cannot be understood through any form of Judeo-Christianity or Judaism. Absolutely not.
And last week on Saturday, you weren't here, but I covered Ephesians chapter 3 and 4 with Sword Brethren.
Okay.
And they so well interlock. The exclusivist message of Paul in Ephesians chapters 3 and 4 so well interlocked with the chapters we had covered last week in Isaiah on
mm-hmm.
this program,
mm-hmm.
That,
mm-hmm.
that I cited them very often in the Ephesians program.
Very good. Very good. Okay. All right. So chapter 47?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Here we go. Verse 1, come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground. Now, perhaps virgin daughter, obviously, all of the nation states of Genesis chapter 10 were white nations founded by the descendants of Noah. Noah's three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. Okay? So there would have been a time when the nation of Babylon, which was was it under Ham or under Shem? Do you recall, Bill?
Well, it was originally, even though Shemites occupied the land, and the Chaldeans are Shemites.
Yes.
Through the Aramaeans. They are a branch of the Aramaeans.
Okay.
That broke off and actually conquered Babylon from the Cushites.
Mm-hmm.
Nimrod, the first Adamite to usurp authority over his brethren and claim himself to be a tyrant, which is basically the story in Genesis chapter 10 concerning him.
Okay.
And starting an empire and ruling over his brethren. Well, Nimrod's empire, the seat of it was in Babylonia.
So there would have been a time when the virgin daughter would have been a white people, okay?
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of historical evidence that there are Kenites, and especially a Kenite priesthood and Kenite wanderers and nomads among these people. However, the nation was a white nation. I mean,
yes.
Sumer was white. The Chaldeans were a white tribe. And at this time, they were the dominant ethnic force in Babylonia.
Okay. A couple of people saying that the show is not recording, but my screen says it is being recorded. So, okay. All right. So people are confirming. Okay, very good. All right, let me start over with verse 1. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground. There is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no more be called tender and delicate. Of course, they became a tyrannical empire. Verse 2. Take the millstones and grind meal. Uncover your locks. Make bare the leg. Uncover the thigh. Pass over the rivers. Your nakedness shall be uncovered. Yea, your shame shall be seen. I will take vengeance, and I will not meet you as a man. Of course, this is talking about the corruption of the kingdom of Babylon.
Well, right, but I also believe that this intones that you know, our, now that we're ruled over by this Babylonian system,
yes.
I believe this is a dual fulfillment prophecy.
Yes, very good.
And that this is, you know, coming again in our future when Babylon falls. And,
yes.
And the proof of that is in Revelation chapter 17 and 18, right?
Yes.
And the our deliverance is evidently going to come in a moment of our greatest anguish.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to compare Revelation 18, 7 to 8 here.
Okay.
And read that from the CNT. As much as she has magnified herself and lived wantonly,
mm-hmm.
so much you give torment and grief to her. And you means the servants of Yahweh, the children of Israel. Because in her heart she says that I sit a queen and I am not a widow and I have not seen grief. For this reason, in one, and that goes hand in hand with Isaiah and Yahweh saying, I will not meet you as a man.
Mm-hmm.
For this reason, in one day shall her plagues come, death and grief and famine, and she shall be burned with fire, because mighty is Prince Yahweh who judges her, or the Lord Yahweh who judges
mm-hmm.
her. Now, these verses and those which proceed, which we'll see as you read on, tell us that we will render justice to Babylon.
Right.
But the key is that first Babylon has to fall. And Babylon falls on its own.
Right.
And it is not going to be us who force it to fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The widowhood theme relating to Revelation 18:7, it is repeated several times here in this chapter.
Yes. Yes.
And I would say that Israel's true husband is Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, we will be watching as, and if we're smart, we'll get out of the way while Babylon falls and not be crushed under the weight of its fall. And while it's falling, I think that's when our people will be called upon to, do battle. Because we cannot make war against the beast as its current might is just too overpowering.
Right, but first we have to come out of the system,
yes.
and then we have to clean things
yes.
up. That's
yes.
the way I look at it.
Exactly. Verse 4, as for our Redeemer, Yahweh of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Sit you silent and get you into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no more be called the Lady of Kingdoms. I was angry with my people. Of course, that's not the Chaldeans or Babylonians. That's the Israelites. I have polluted my inheritance and given them into your hand.
And it's happened again today.
Yes.
And the only difference is that today we're not taken out of our lands and brought to another.
Right. They've come into our land. Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You did show them no mercy. Upon the ancient have you verily laid your yoke. And, of course, they're not showing us any mercy now either.
Well, we are definitely in the hands of the beast today, Revelation 17:17.
Right.
And we have beasts among us,
mm-hmm.
and that's because of our disobedience.
Yes, because
it says Yahweh was wroth with his people.
If it weren't for the churches allowing all this race mixing to go on and preaching that the Jews are God's chosen people, we wouldn't be going through all this anguish that we're going through now.
Well, right. If we didn't accept the lies of the churches, we wouldn't be.
Yes.
And either we accept Yahweh as king and sovereign, or we end up with beasts.
That's right.
There's no other alternative.
That's right. Verse 7, and you said, I shall be a lady forever, so that you did not lay these things to your heart, neither did remember the latter end of it. Therefore, hear now this, you that are given to pleasures, that dwell carelessly, that say in your heart, I am, and none else beside me, I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of the children. Of course, this is a direct, almost verbatim, Revelation chapter 18, verse 9. But these two things shall come to you in a moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon you in their perfection for the multitude of your sorceries.
Now I would like to comment on that.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, pharmakia in the Septuagint.
Okay.
But which is also the word used in Revelation 18:23.
Drugs, yeah.
Describing the fall of Babylon.
Yeah.
Which I'll quote. By your pharmaceuticals have all the nations been deceived.
Mm-hmm.
That's my translation.
Right.
The word referred to the use of drugs and potions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there might be a few 100,000 nut jobs in this country and in Europe who think they're witches, right?
Right.
But the society is not going to be punished on the account of those nut jobs.
Right.
Rather, the society is going to be punished because of the hundreds of millions who are hooked on real sorcery.
That's right.
The Jewish pharmaceutical industry.
That's right. That's right. Both legal and illegal, yes. Because our people
know
better.
I mean, LSD, and today it's ecstasy, right?
Yeah.
And they're manufactured, both those drugs are manufactured almost exclusively in Palestine.
Mm-hmm. Israel.
By
Jews. So-called Israel, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's just the half of it. I mean, the rest of the drugs that flooded into this country are for the most part, it can be demonstrated, they're brought in by the CIA.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Let me repeat verse 9 again. But these two things shall come to you in a moment, in one day. The loss of children and widowhood, they shall come upon you in their perfection for the multitude of your sorceries and for the great abundance of your enchantments. Okay? We're definitely... Oh, man, if we want to talk about enchantments, we could do a whole show about that. The way they control the media, the entertainment industry, as you mentioned, pharmakia, just about every aspect of our daily lives is controlled by these enchantments. You know, they're basically taking the white people, the white race, and telling us how to think, how to act, how to behave, how to borrow, how to spend. Who to fight against? There's virtually nothing in our daily lives that isn't controlled by them and dictated to us by them.
Well, I would suggest, you know, there's a, I'm trying to get to it now. I would really love to read it.
Okay.
Kristen pointed this out a few years ago. And it's a quote from the book of Adam and Eve.
Okay.
And I'd like to read this. And it's impromptu. You know, I hadn't planned on this. But in reaction to what you just said, because it's exactly true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to quote Clifton from his Watchman's teaching letter number 66.
Okay.
There will probably be those who scoff at any reference to the three books of Adam and Eve, but it should be pointed out from the start that the first, second, and third books of Adam and Eve are mostly allegorical and prophetic in nature and cannot be taken in a literal sense. I will give you an example of such a case. In the 27th chapter of the first book of Adam and Eve, we read the following. Quote, when Satan, the hater of all good, saw how they continued in prayer,
mm-hmm.
and how God communed with them and comforted them, and how he had accepted their offering. Tell me that doesn't describe 19th century America.
Right.
Satan made an apparition. He began with transforming his hosts.
Mm-hmm.
In his hands was a flashing fire, a movie camera.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in a great light, stage lights.
Right.
He then placed his throne near the mouth of the cave, television.
Yes.
Because he could not enter into it by reason of their prayers. And he shed light into the cave until the cave glistened over Adam and Eve.
Yes.
While his hosts began to sing praises.
Yes.
Day.
Right.
And Satan did this in order that when Adam saw the light, he would think within himself that it was a heavenly light,
uh-huh.
Milton Berle.
Right.
And that Satan's hosts, every Jew in Hollywood, were angels, and that God sent them to watch at the cave and to give him light in the darkness. So that when Adam came out of the cave and saw them, and Adam and Eve bowed to Satan
right.
every single night.
Yeah.
Then he would overcome Adam thereby and a second time humble him before God.
Mm-hmm.
When, therefore, Adam and Eve saw the light, fancying it was real, they strengthened their hearts.
Yeah.
Yet, as they were trembling, Adam said to Eve, look at that great light and at those many songs of praise and all those Jewish actresses and actors.
Yeah, right.
And that host standing outside that do not come into us. Do not tell us what they say or whence they come, or what is the meaning of this light,
yes.
what those praises are, whitherfore they have been sent hither, and why they do not come in.
Mm-hmm.
That's television. I'm
yeah.
sorry, that's television. There's no doubt in my mind.
Well, yeah, the image of the beast, no doubt. Absolutely
and that's
no
the,
doubt.
The equivalency that's the remarks that Clifton made.
Right. Well, that's very good. You know, and some of that can be taken literally. Right. Okay, and these are the enchantments, the mystery Babylon, full of enchantments, full of signs and wonders, all of which are false, folks. Okay, verse 10, we're in Isaiah chapter 47. For you have trusted in your wickedness. You have said, none sees me, Well, they don't see the Jew behind the tube, right? they hire good-looking white people to be their front men. None sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge, it has perverted you. And you have said in your heart, I am, and none else beside me. Man, this is right up to date.
And this is exactly what humanism and the sciences, the so-called sciences,
yes,
lead people to believe.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, science itself. Science, movies, broadcasting, newspapers, papers, right? Newspapers is probably better. And education, it's all totally controlled by the host of the Antichrist.
Well, right. And let me just make a statement. I don't have a problem with hard science.
Mm-hmm.
Hard science is
right.
Very good. It's a study of the creation.
Mm-hmm.
It's most excellent endeavor to find out how things work.
Yes.
And Paul says the unseen things of his should prove to us, yeah, you know, that he exists. But and that's in Romans chapter 1, I'm paraphrasing. But the it's the Jewish interpretation of the results of the hard sciences.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely perverted.
Right.
It's
right.
Perverted evolution. In every way, and they create lies.
Yeah. Evolution, Big Bang, all this stuff that comes from the Jewish mind, no doubt about it. Yeah. Verse 11, therefore shall evil come upon you. You shall not know from where it rises, and mischief shall fall upon you. You shall not be able to put it off, and desolation shall come upon you suddenly, which you shall not know. Of course, this was quite literally the case for who was the king of Babylon? Can't think of his name right now. When the Medes and Persians took over, Belshazzar, right? So
yes.
There will be a similar sudden destruction of Babylon the second. Okay, verse 12.
Oh, absolutely. He was taken that night. He was partying it up with
yes.
the lords and the nobles, and he was taken that night and killed.
That's
and
right.
Dead, out of his kingdom.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, it looks like doom and gloom out there, and it never concerns me. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't believe that the end is going to look like the end. Yeah, you know, it's going to be at a time when everything looks rosy and the economy's doing great and everything looks like everything's soaring along. And that's when
yes.
the end will come.
Well, there's no doubt that the media always spins it in a positive way, as if there's nothing wrong, you know. And please continue to invest in the stock market. Every single dollar you have, folks, right? Nothing's wrong. Verse 12, stand now with your enchantments and with the multitude of your sorceries, wherein you have labored from your youth, if so be you shall be able to profit, if so be you may prevail. You are wearied in the multitude of your counsels. Now it's interesting that, of course, as the end game here, the international economy, the and what the Israelis did to the flotilla of aid workers going to Gaza, and the Gulf oil spill, et cetera, et cetera. They are having to micromanage event after event after event because their multitude of crimes and sins that are going on right now require their total attention. Put it that way. Okay. And all of these situations could get out of hand really fast. And they have to pump money to keep people quiet. They have to pump money into the oil spill. And they have to pump money into the illegal immigration scam. And so the more they try to destroy us in all these various ways, the more time they waste doing these things. And this is going to bankrupt them. Okay? And then, as you say, Bill, you know, one sudden catastrophe will take care of it all. It'll just take care of it all. Okay, verse 13 again. You are wearied in the multitude of your counsels. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators stand up and save you from these things that shall come upon you. All of the economic advisors, political advisors, right?
Well, right, and this refers to scientists as well as seers.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be, you know, scientists in the sense of astronomers, but in the sense of the economists and,
sure.
and all the others, as you said. But in this day, the scientists and the seers the hard scientists and the mystical superstitions were very much interrelated.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah, there wasn't any real distinction between a priest and a scientist in those days. Yes. Verse 14, behold, and in fact, there isn't that much when you go into the universities either.
Well, there's no distinction today.
Right.
All of the scientists are basically...
Are social scientists, which means...
Well, they're priests of the godless religion of evolution.
That's right. That's
they're
right.
The high priest of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And evolution is a religion for the godless.
That's right.
A religion is, or a faith is a,
yeah,
a belief in things not seen.
And
nobody's ever seen evolution.
Right. It's never been documented. Absolutely not. You know.
No, one species cannot morph into another.
Yeah. And
period.
All social studies are nothing but communism in one form or another. You know,
yes, they all promote
Freudian,
the advancement of
communism. Yeah, exactly. All of it. It's very humanistic, very communistic. Yes. Verse 14, behold, they shall be as stubble. The fire shall burn them. They shall not deliver themselves from the power of the flame. There shall not be a coal to warm at, nor fire to sit before at.
Now, the only place this seems the only picture that's drawn elsewhere in the Bible is in the Old Testament, is in Obadiah 18.
Mm-hmm.
18, excuse me.
Right.
And the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble.
Right, right.
And they shall kindle them. They... Joseph and Jacob shall kindle in them and devour them, the house of Esau.
That's right.
And there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau,
mm-hmm,
for Yahweh has spoken it.
That's right. And the double witness at Zechariah 14:21, there shall be no more the Canaanite to bother the people of Israel. Verse 15, thus shall they be to you with whom you have labored, even your merchants from your youth. They shall wander everyone to his quarter. None shall save you. Okay, so this is, obviously this has happened once with the original Babylon. And we know from Revelation 18, verse 1, Babylon is fallen. It's going to fall twice, folks. And boy, we are going to witness it. Chapter 48, verse 1. Hear you this, O house of Jacob, which are called by the name of Israel, and are come forth out of the waters of Judah, which swear by the name of Yahweh and make mention of the God or Elohim of Israel, but not in truth nor in righteousness.
Now that describes the Church of the Laodiceans, or the self-righteous people.
Mm-hmm.
None of our mainstream religious sects call upon Yahweh in righteousness.
Yes.
They do not seek his will.
Mm-hmm.
They would rather be ignorant of their sins and,
right,
and self-justified.
Right, exactly. Self-praise, that's what it is. Verse 2, for they call themselves of the holy city and stay themselves upon the God of Israel, the Lord of hosts is his name, or Yahweh of hosts is his name. I have declared the former things from the beginning, and they went forth out of my mouth, and I showed them. I did them suddenly, and they came to pass. Ladies and gentlemen, when Yahweh tells us, makes a prophecy, tells us what he's going to do, you can bet on it. Verse 4, because I knew that you are obstinate, and your neck is an iron sinew, and your brow brass. Yes,
well,
and we are an obstinate people, right.
Well, we have his word, and our ancestors had the vision of these things. They
yes.
saw these things happen, and after all of our travails, we still don't get it.
That's right. Our Judeo-Christian pastors hold this Bible in their hands and quote from it profusely, but they do not quote the truth. They pick and choose verses, and they shuffle them up in one of those games where you put numbers in, right?
Well, right, and then they throw it in a blender with sociology and
right.
Freudian psychology.
Yeah, and then they let it out of the blender, and then whatever if there's a meaningful sentence to be constructed from it, that's what they teach. It's garbage, folks. It's absolute garbage. Because I knew that you were obstinate, and your neck is an iron sinew, and your brow brass. I have even from the beginning declared it to you. Before it came to pass, I showed it you, lest you should say, my idol has done them, and my graven image and my molten image has commanded them. He has warned us repeatedly that we, the true Israelites, the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Caucasian people, would follow false gods, would follow false teachings repeatedly, and they revel in it. Verse 6, You have heard, see all this, and will you not declare it? I have showed you new things from this time, even hidden things, and you did not know them. Okay? How much time have we spent educating Israelites on the migrations of the lost 10 tribes and the two tribes that joined them? Okay? Yet, the Christian world does not want to hear it. Verse 7, they are created now and not from the beginning, even before the day when you heard them, not lest you should say, behold, I knew them. They don't want to say, I know the Old Testament.
Well, this is talking about the idols.
Okay, right.
The idols, you know, that we shouldn't say, behold, I know them, because they're created now.
Right.
Nothing.
Okay, verse 8, yea, you heard not, yea, you knew not, yea, from that time that your ear was not opened. For I knew that you would deal very treacherously and was called a transgressor from the womb. And folks, most of our people, especially if they're into Judeo-Christianity or if they're into liberalism, they are transgressors from the womb. Verse 9, for my name's sake I will defer my anger, and for my praise will I refrain for you, that I cut you not off. This is his mercy, folks.
Well, right, but it's for his sake and not for ours.
Right.
Because he made a promise to Abraham.
That's right.
We deserve to be cut off.
Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, yes. Verse 10, behold, I have refined you, but not with silver. I have chosen you in the furnace of affliction.
Not in the gospel of personal enrichment, which the devil
will
preach today.
And doesn't Paul tell us to rejoice in our afflictions, in our tribulations?
Right.
Yeah.
And the gospel of personal enrichment is the perfect gospel of Babylon.
That's right. And it's not affliction. It's not tribulation. It's self-worship. It's trying to live in the lap of luxury, imitating those pulpit bastards called televangelists, right?
It's an insistence that one deserves to live in a lap of luxury simply because one professes, I believe.
Yes, exactly.
And
verse 11.
It's just crazy.
It's trite. It's absolutely trite, yet for them it's profound. Verse 11, for my own sake, even for my own sake will I do it, for how should my name be polluted? And I will not give my glory to another, not to any idol or anything else. Verse 12.
And this also indicates to me that we are not going to get ourselves out of this mess.
Right.
Glory shall be Yahweh's.
Right. Well, Yahshua said he chooses us. We don't choose him. Verse 12. Hearken to me, O Jacob and Israel, my called. I am he. I am the first. I also am the last.
So that's another reference to Revelation, Joshua Christ.
Right, verse 13.
And Jacob and Israel are still his call.
That's right.
There is no replacement theology that could possibly be valid.
Right, from Genesis 1 to Revelation 22, it's Israel, it's Adamic Israel, and no one else, yes. Verse 13, my hand also has laid the foundation of the earth, and my right hand has spanned the heavens. When I call to them, they stand up together.
Yahweh is the one God of the creation.
Mm-hmm. He is the creator, no doubt. Verse 14, all you assemble yourselves and hear, which among them has declared these things? Yahweh has loved him. He will do his pleasure on Babylon.
And let me say that the him is the Jacob of verse 12.
Right, yes. And any one of us who.
Anybody descended from Jacob.
Right. He will do his pleasure on Babylon, and his arm shall be on the Chaldeans. I, even I, have spoken, yea, I have called him. I have brought him, and he shall make his way prosperous.
And let me qualify that by saying that the him and the Jacob and the Israel addressed here are being used collectively.
Yes, okay. Come, 16, come you near to me, hear you this, I have not spoken in secret. From the beginning, from the time that it was, there I am, and now I, Yahweh Elohim, and his spirit has sent me. Verse 17, thus saith Yahweh, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am Yahweh your God, which teaches you to profit, which leads, his instruction to us, if we follow it, is to our profit.
Well, right, it's not to teach you to profit through
right. which leads you by the way that you should go. Oh, that you had hearkened to my commandments. Then had your peace been as a river, and your righteousness as the waves of the sea. Folks, our prosperity is in his obeying his commandments. Verse 19, your seed, that is descendants, the seeds of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, also had been as the sand, and the offspring of your bowels like the gravel thereof. His name should not have been cut off nor destroyed from before me. Verse 20.
And that's only a reference, you know, that's not a reference to Israel disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reference to the nation being transplanted and called by another name.
Right, yes, and punished too, yes. Verse 20, go you forth of Babylon, flee you from the Chaldeans. With a voice of singing declare you, tell this, utter it even to the end of the earth, say you, Yahweh has redeemed his servant Jacob.
And we're going to see that several times in these chapters.
Yes.
I mean, redemption is only for
right.
the same Jacob, the same Israel that was deported
yes.
by the Assyrians in the Old Testament.
Yes.
And it can't ever be applied to any replacement church or to any other people.
That's right. That's absolutely right. There's certainly nothing in the Old Testament. And I'd say
there's nothing in the New Testament.
Right. Nothing in the New Testament. Of course, the translations of words like Gentile, Jew, and et cetera. Have been used to create this false replacement theology. But I would say that I haven't found a single Christian or Jewish author who refutes the idea that the Old Testament is exclusively about Israel. Okay? They all agree that the Old Testament is exclusively about Israel, and then they have to jump through hoops to make the New Testament be universalistic. Of course,
well,
that's all
they
false.
Live a lie. They
yeah.
live a lie, and
yeah.
it's a very serious
right.
hypocrisy.
But these prophecies and promises and covenants are exclusively with one people and one people only. And there's no indication whatsoever in the Old Testament that these covenants and promises and prophecies can be transferred to any other people.
It's probably the greatest example of cognitive dissonance.
Right, exactly. Verse 21, and they thirsted not when he led them through this desert. He caused the waters to flow out of the rock for them. He split the rock also, and the waters gushed out. There is no peace, saith Yahweh, to the wicked. Okay, it's just that justice has long been delayed. Okay. Chapter 49, verse 1. Listen, O isles.
Now the isles have been the thing being addressed here since Isaiah 41.
Mm-hmm.
So this only reaffirms that.
Right, right. Okay. And the isles would be those
isles and coastlands of Europe to where the children of Israel were either emigrated or were eventually deported.
Yes, yes. Those places where our people settled. Exactly.
And we will see that Isaiah specifically mentions where our people settled.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where the dispersion of Israel was to go in chapter 66.
Okay, very good. So, continuing here, listen, O isles, to me, and hearken. Now, of course, isles here is metaphorical. It's talking about the people who live in the isles, just as the word Jerusalem is also metaphorical. We're not talking... He's not speaking to the city of Jerusalem. He's talking to us, the people
right.
of Jerusalem.
And,
okay?
and let me say something before you continue.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be evident for a few verses. But this here in Isaiah 49, this is a rhetorical discussion
mm-hmm.
between Jacob and Isaiah speaking for Jacob.
Okay.
And it's Jacob speaking right now.
Okay.
And Yahweh.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
And it's very hard to figure these verses out in the King James.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Listen, O isles, to me, and hearken, you people from afar. Okay. The Yahweh has called me from the womb. From the bowels of my mother has he made mention of my name.
And that's me being Jacob, my
mm-hmm.
mother being Rebekah.
Right. Jacob Israel, yes. And he has made my mouth like a sharp sword. In the shadow of his hand has he hidden me and made me a polished shaft. In his quiver has he hidden me. Of course, he has hidden the people of Israel.
Exactly.
In Europe.
And Jacob is again speaking here.
Right. And the European Israelites don't know that they're Jacob Israel. Verse 3, and said to me, you are my servant. in whom I will be glorified. Now, have the Jews been his servants? Have they done anything to fulfill any of these prophecies? Have they spread the gospel? Have they been his witnesses?
Now let me just say that here, that this verse proves what I said about the context. Okay, that this is Jacob speaking here. Now, a lot of mainstream Christians and the commentaries in the Bibles I use seem to try to say that the servant being referenced here is Christ himself.
Oh, okay.
And that all these promises were to fall on Christ and all that. And all their bunk about Galatians 3:16, and it's all lies.
Mm-hmm.
The context here is that the servant is collectively Jacob, Israel.
Yes.
It's speaking about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not speaking about Christ in particular,
well,
which is what a lot of commentaries might try to lead you to believe.
Right, and Yahshua Messiah was never in one of those aisles that we know of, right? He was never.
Well, right. And in the end, Christ is the head of the assembly and all that, but this has nothing to do with that.
Right.
These words are to Israel.
That's
and,
right.
And they try to point these words to convince you that the context here is Christ, and especially later in the chapter, right?
Right.
And that way that their replacement theology works.
Right.
But the context here, the servant here is collectively Israel.
Yeah. Yeah, so they try to reinterpret passages of the Old Testament so that their replacement theology might have some basis in the Old Testament, which of course it does not. Okay, verse 4. Then I said, I have labored in vain, I have spent my strength for nothing, and in vain. Surely my judgment is with Yahweh, and my work with my Elohim. And now, saith Yahweh, that formed me from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob again to him, though Israel be not gathered, yet shall I be glorious in the eyes of Yahweh, and my Elohim shall be my strength. And of course, throughout history, there has been a remnant of Jacob Israel who stands with Yahweh. Verse 6. And he said, it is a light thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preserved of Israel. I will also give you for a light to the nations that you may be my salvation to the end of the earth. Now, go ahead.
I would like to talk about this whole verse.
Okay.
All right. Because I believe that it should be split in half.
Okay.
Okay. We still have a rhetorical, Jacob speaking halfway through this verse.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And I believe that in the beginning of this verse, Jacob's asking a question. Because Yahweh is going to be the servant to Jacob to raise up the tribes of his children.
Right.
And to restore the preserved of Israel, right?
Yes, yes.
So the first half of the verse should be a question.
That's
and
the way
he,
I started reading it, too.
And he, meaning Jacob, said, is it a light thing, and this is the question, that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and restore the preserved of Israel?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half is Yahweh's response.
That's the answer, right.
I will also give thee for a light to the nations that you may be my salvation unto the ends of the earth.
Yes.
Now let me read that from the Septuagint.
Okay.
And that second half says, I have given thee for the covenant of a race. And that's what the Greek says, and I'm reading Brenton's translation, for a light of the nations that you should be for salvation to the end of the earth.
Uh-huh. Right.
So that's, it changes the whole sense. And
right.
I think it supports my contention that this is Yahweh's answer to Jacob.
Right, right, yeah.
And it's only the first part because verse 7, it continues an answer.
Right. And anyone who wants to argue that, well, the Jews have spread all over the world too, well, that's only after our people, through Israel, got there first.
Well, right. They never built those nations.
Right.
They never supplied the legitimate kings. They never
right.
That they were to be spread amongst all nations as a curse and a reproach to my people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fulfillment of different prophecy. And I would
right.
That you have to read Jeremiah and chapter 24, I think it is, the good and the bad figs, and that corresponds with Luke, and I think it's in Luke chapter 21 where Christ gives the discourse about the destruction of Jerusalem, and he says that these people will be scattered amongst all nations and taken slaves, and to be a curse, and that's Luke 21:24.
Okay.
And they shall fall by the blade of the sword and be taken captive into every nation.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerusalem shall be trampled on by the nations until the fulfillment of the times of the nations. And that's Luke 21:24. And that's the diaspora of the bad figs.
Okay.
And that's a whole separate prophecy.
Right.
And to the proof of that is by comparing Luke 21:24 to the following verses.
Okay.
Jeremiah 24:8-9, Jeremiah 26:6, Jeremiah 29:17-19, and Isaiah 65:15.
Okay.
Which I can't read because I don't have them in front of me. I didn't
right.
plan on speaking
yeah, yeah.
about this.
Yeah. Yeah, but clearly the Jewish diaspora, as they call it, did not begin until 70 AD. And obviously the true Israelites were dispersed 745 BC through, it was a 65-year period, according to Isaiah, as I recall now.
Yes.
That our people, the true Israelites, were dispersed from Judea and Israel into Europe, parts west, south, east, and north. Okay.
Right. And by the words of Christ in Luke, the diaspora, if you want me to move the accent, of 70 AD
right.
is the diaspora of Jeremiah's bad figs.
Right. Okay. So we have to understand, folks, there are two diasporas. So we always have to, and the Jews always imitate our behavior so that they can pretend to be us. Okay? Well, who's the leaders? We are. The Jews are the followers. As per Genesis 3:15, 14:15, and 16. They're the ones who are nipping at our heels wherever we go. Verse 7, chapter 49 of Isaiah. Thus saith Yahweh, the Redeemer of Israel and his Holy One, to him whom man despises.
Now he's talking about Jacob here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jacob spoke for the first 6.5 verses.
Okay.
And from the middle of verse 6 on, it's Yahweh speaking about Jacob.
Okay.
And addressing him.
To him whom the nation abhors, to a servant of rulers, kings shall see and arise, princes also shall worship, because Yahweh is faithful and the Holy One of Israel, and he shall choose you. Okay.
Right. And Jacob is the not
right.
Christ.
Right.
Jacob is the subject.
Yes.
Of this discourse.
And, of course, Jacob individually and Jacob collectively. Right.
Well, it's Jacob collectively because
yes.
it's all of Israel that was taken away by the Assyrians.
Mm-hmm.
And the nation abhorred Jacob. Or that could probably be translated better, the race. I haven't seen the Hebrew word.
Yes.
But Jacob became the servant of the rulers, of the Medes, of the Persians, of the Assyrians,
mm-hmm.
and wherever he was distributed to
right.
until the regathering, which happened when the Cimmerian and Scythian tribes moved across the Caucasus and around the Black Sea and into Europe.
Mm-hmm. Right. Verse 8. Thus saith Yahweh, in an acceptable time have I heard you, and in a day of salvation have I helped you, and I will preserve you and give you for a covenant of the people to establish the earth, to cause to inherit the desolate heritage. Okay?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's our people who inherited the desolate heritage, you know, not the Jews.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Europe was basically, Central Europe was a swamp.
That's right.
Germany was a swamp.
Right.
But when our people moved into
unfortunately, it's becoming a swamp again.
Well, right, a different kind of swamp.
Yeah.
But it was very heavily forested. It was full of swamps, and it was very difficult land to live in.
Mm-hmm.
And first, that protected our people from the Romans for a long time.
Yes. Yes.
And second, that's why our people were constantly trying to push west across the Rhine
mm-hmm.
and south across the Danube, where the land was much more fertile
mm-hmm.
and the temperature much
cooler.
Much warmer. Yeah, you know, because it was much warmer below the Danube and
okay.
west of the Rhine.
Right. Well, they probably our people have no problem with colder weather either, so that the Teutons or you know, the Teutons in English, you know, well, migrated north, and they felt
well, right, but we'd much rather live in Florida, right? Come on.
Right.
Southern California.
Not in the summertime, Bill. Okay,
I mean, the mountains of Italy and the plains of France, the river valleys of France are much nicer than the than northern Germany and Poland. But let me speak about this verse.
Okay.
You know, Paul, Jacob Israel, is also the subject here in verse 8. And Paul proves when he quotes this passage at 2 Corinthians 6:2 that Paul knew that the Corinthians were a part of dispersed Israel.
Okay.
And he demonstrated that more fully in 1 Corinthians. However, Paul quotes this at 2 Corinthians 6:2 concerning the Corinthians, and he can only be talking about Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul is not taking Old Testament passages out of context like today's fraud pastors do.
Right. Right. Yes. Very good. Verse 9, that you may say to the prisoners, go forth, to them that are in darkness, show yourselves.
And it's our race who were the prisoners sitting in darkness.
Right. Right.
But now that we have the light of the gospel, the only reason why we're still in darkness is of our own accord. It's
right.
Our fault because we don't actually read and believe it.
Right. Yeah, we refuse to believe what the Bible really teaches, and we refuse to believe that our oppressors are our oppressors, okay? We take their lying words, and we blame ourselves for what they do, right? They shall feed in the ways, and their pastor shall be in all high places. They shall not hunger nor thirst, neither shall the heat nor the sun smite them, for he that has mercy on them shall lead them. Even by the springs of water shall he guide them. Of course, the rivers of Europe were our pathways.
I have a bunch of notes on this because this, compare Revelation 7, 16 to 17.
Okay.
They shall hunger no longer, nor shall they thirst any longer, nor shall the sun fall upon them, nor any burning heat. Because the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne shall shepherd them and shall guide them to the fountains of living waters.
Mm-hmm.
And Yahweh shall wipe every tear from their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And in Revelation chapter 7, it can be established that the 144,000 and the innumerable multitude
mm-hmm.
of that chapter were all those Israelites who were assured an escape. Well, the 144,000 are those Israelites who were assured an escape from the fall of the old world
mm-hmm.
and the series of Babylonian empires, which ended with the fall of Rome.
Right.
And the innumerable multitude of those who suffered during that, who washed their cloaks in the blood of the Lamb.
Yes.
Okay. And here in Isaiah 49, very similar language is used to describe those who would escape the Assyrian and Babylonian captivities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, the 144,000 are mentioned again in Revelation chapter 14. So I believe that the earlier historical occurrence may be a type for what is to come. However, the 144,000 are definitely Revelation chapter 7. That was tied in with the fall of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
That could be shown without a doubt, reading the Revelation in context.
Right.
With history.
You're referring to the passage where Dan is excluded?
But Dan just isn't there, right?
Yeah,
Dan
had already migrated so far north and west.
Right.
That he wasn't among the European, you know, the central core of European Israelites. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Verse 11, and I will make all my mountains a way, and my highways shall be exalted. Behold, these shall come from afar, and lo, these from the north and from the west, and these from the land of Sinim. Sing, O heavens, and be joyful, O earth, and break forth into singing. This is the good news, folks, O mountains, for Yahweh has comforted his people and will have mercy upon his afflicted.
Now let me say that land of Sinim, I don't know if that has any other meaning, but that's very close to the word, we have Sino.
Yes.
Referring to China.
Right.
And that comes from an ancient Greek word for that land.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. And our people definitely, you know, we know that the mummies from southwestern Mongolia
were far east as the land of Sinim. There's
right.
no doubt.
There are people that they wore sackcloth. Joseph's coat of many colors. What's the Irish term for it?
now the New Strong's Concordance says it's a habitation of unknown location.
Interesting. Okay.
But it's definitely China.
I mean,
it's so much like the ancient Greek word for China.
Yeah.
And we see that in the S-I-N-O prefix that we use speaking about China.
Yeah.
The land of Sidon, that can only be the Scythians who inhabited that, you know, after the deportations, not all the Scythian tribes went immediately west. And the Jakarta's river valleys and what's known today as modern Tibet and the Altai Mountains.
Yes.
And many of the Scythians settled there for many centuries
before
they migrated west. Yeah,
a Frenchman got the word for me. It's plaid. Plaid is the word I was trying to think of.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's
and those
tartans, right?
Now, those mummies, they're on tour in America, as I understand it. So check your internet. They might be coming to a city near you.
Well, they try to push the date back, but I don't believe the date of those mummies is much before 400 B.C.
Okay. Well, it's
and
possible.
I believe that they are Scythians.
Yeah, it's possible they were pre-Scythian Japhethites. Okay.
Well, yes, and they did, that there is much testimony, and I can prove it, and it is in discussed at length in my German Origins paper,
mm-hmm.
that certain tribes in the Medes and Persians traveled and colonized points north of the Danube
mm-hmm.
from the Caucasus Mountain
yeah.
region, from the region around the Black and Caspian Seas.
Yeah, they were Japhethites, and most of Japheth today is known as the Slavic people, but they're still our brothers, okay? And Genesis chapter 10 says, Japheth shall dwell in the tents of Shem, meaning that they will get rulers from the Shemites, which the Tsars were, okay, the Kaisers were, etc., etc., okay? Verse 14, but Zion said, Yahweh has forsaken me, and my Lord has forgotten me. Can a woman forget her sucking child that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget you.
And many of us lament this now that Yahweh, well, where is he? What's going on here?
Well,
why
yeah,
is Jews allowed to get away with all this? But
right.
we should not suppose that he is going to
forget us
and leave us
right.
unavenged.
Yes, but because, you know, well, I, even within Christian identity, you know, there's kind of a doom and gloom attitude, right? That all of this, you know, the average white person is just simply clueless. And has no idea what's going on, and that average white person, if that person's a Christian, doesn't realize what's going on. And then,
I don't like to always discuss my notes ahead of time because it loses some of the impact. But I'll say it here:
okay.
it's evident in Isaiah chapter 52 that there will be an awakening.
Yeah,
that it will come, and it might seem impossible now.
Yeah.
But it is going to happen.
Well, and of course, Ezekiel's dry bones coming back to life.
Well, and that's exactly what I correlated to,
yes.
and you'll see that much of the language is very
yes.
much the same.
Okay, very good. All right, verse 16, behold, I have graven you upon the palms of my hands, and your walls are continually Yahweh has tattoos on his hands. Verse 17, your children shall make haste, your destroyers and they that made you waste shall go forth of you. Ooh, boy, we can't wait for that day for them to leave. Verse 18, lift up your eyes round about, and behold, all these gather themselves together and come to you. As I live, says Yahweh, you shall surely clothe you with them all as with an ornament and bind them on you as a bride does. So all these races want to live with us, among us, even though they hate us, for our prosperity. Because there is no prosperity anywhere else. Everywhere else is tyranny and paupery.
And this can only describe the Christian nations of Europe.
That's
it
right.
could never describe the Jews.
That's right. And only the white nations are accepting immigrants of other races into our countries for their benefit. There's no other nations that are doing this, folks. It's only our people that are doing it.
Not even the Jews are doing it.
If
you tried to go to Iran or to China or to Japan, and just move into the country and live like one of them.
And claim welfare benefits, right?
And marry one of their women, they'll run you right out.
Mm-hmm.
You have nothing coming. You're getting run right out.
Well, you'll be lucky if you get run out. You'll wind up a corpse. in those countries if you try anything like that.
Well, that's possible too. I mean, you'll be run out one way or another.
Yeah, right. Verse 19, for your waste and your desolate places and the land of your destruction shall even now be too narrow by reason of the inhabitants, and they that swallowed you up shall be far away. Okay, well, let's continue here. This is obviously, did you have the Septuagint translation of this verse handy?
Well, yes. I
because this is kind of awkward. And,
here and hit that. Well, let me read the NAS first, because that's usually pretty good.
Okay.
I'm being honest. It's usually better than the King James.
Okay.
For your waste and desolate places and your destroyed land, surely now you will be too cramped for the inhabitants,
mm-hmm.
and those who swallowed you will be far away. And you're right. That makes no sense in the NAS either.
Yeah, right.
Let's try the Septuagint and Brenton's English. For thy desert and marred and ruined places shall now be too narrow by reason of the inhabitants.
Okay.
And
okay,
they that devoured
thee
shall be removed far from thee.
Okay. What was the last sentence you said, or last statement?
And they that devoured thee shall be moved far from thee.
Okay. Okay. Well, probably ultimately, yes, they will be. Okay. But this
remember that this has a double fulfillment.
Right.
This, you know, the places that Israel was put into by the Assyrians must have been unfruitful and whether too
right.
small or they left. I mean, they up and left and found
right.
better places.
Well, it's fascinating that our people seem to prosper best when they're slaves, right? When they know they're slaves, okay? And so in Egypt, what, how many, 72 people walked in and 2 million walked out?
Well, right, and I've done the math on that.
Uh-huh.
And he's not here right now. Bill G, when I first told him about this, he's an accountant. He sat and did a spreadsheet.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But if, you can turn 37 couples. It was 75 people.
Uh-huh.
So if you take 37 couples, all right,
mm-hmm.
and each couple over 20 years has 7 children.
Mm-hmm.
And after 20 years, that those 7 children get married and multiply
yes.
for 20 years and so on and so forth. Each couple every 20 years has 7 children,
right.
which is not a lot. I mean, yes. I had 6 children in 8 years.
Yes.
You can turn in 200 years, in 150 years,
mm-hmm.
you can turn 75 people into 1.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
Okay.
150 years, 6 generations.
Yeah, yeah. Fascinating, yeah. Well, our people never had any problem reproducing until just lately. Obviously, verse 19 is talking about our population explosion, okay? Our population explosion. And it's only in recent years, the last couple of decades, maybe the last 3 decades, that the white race has seen fit because of, you know, propaganda about overpopulation, that we're not reproducing ourselves. And yet all the other races that we support and feed, house, and clothe, those, they're having a population explosion, okay? Let's read on here. Verse 20, the children which you shall have after you have lost the other shall say again in your ears, the place is too straight for me. Give place to me that I may dwell. Of course, we're talking about the migrations because our population exploded. We continue to find more Lebensraum, as the Germans call it, living room, space to live. Verse 21. Then shall you say in your heart, who has fathered me these, seeing I have lost my children? And am desolate, a captive, and removing to and fro, and who has brought up these? Behold, I was left alone. These, where had they been? It sounds like here he's talking about foreign children in his midst.
Well, no, I don't think so.
Okay,
it sounds like it's talking about all of the Celto-Saxon tribes of Europe. How
yes.
did these come from Israel? How
oh,
did
okay.
they get here?
Yes.
Where have they been? In other words, I lost my children. Well, they picked up and left,
mm-hmm.
so I have more. And they pick up and leave.
Right.
And then we travel across the country and say, where the hell did all these people come from?
Right, right.
Well, you know, look at the settlement of the United States.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, it's 1776 and 13 colonies are liberated from the English.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Okay.
And by 1848, we're swarming into Canada. And we won the Mexican War, and we're settling Texas in the Southwest. And,
yeah.
and before you know it, we filled the whole continent up.
Right.
You're talking
it
about a 70
pretty quickly,
year,
didn't it? Right.
70 year, 80 year period.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell happened? We
yeah.
we have and I imagine that the migrations, the wagon trains and wagon trains of people leaving by the hundreds,
mm-hmm.
and couples, 50, 100 couples. And leaving, just picking up and going somewhere.
Right.
And finding the fertile valley 300-400 miles away. And
yes.
and then in 20-30 years, a bunch of them, you know, all of a sudden there's not 300-400 couples, there's 1,800 couples
yeah,
or 2,400
right.
couples.
Right.
And that valley becomes too small. So half of them pick up and just take off.
Right.
And go another 300 or 400 miles through the next valley.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how America was settled. And that's
yeah.
how I believe we also settled Europe.
That's right. That's why there's motels everywhere.
Well, right. The Cimmerians swept across Anatolia right around the turn of the 7th century B.C. They overran Lydia. They overran Phrygia. And they crossed the Bosphorus by all historical accounts
mm-hmm.
and traveled down the Danube River Valley until they got to the Rhine. They crossed the Rhine.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got to the Rhine, they seemed to have split up. And,
okay.
and some of them went into northern Germany.
Right.
Some of them crossed from there into Britain. Some of them went into Gaul, into France.
Yeah.
And some of them went and looted Rome. And by 390 B.C., they looted Rome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 200 years after they looted Phrygia.
Yeah.
And they were spread out all over the place in
yeah.
200 years.
Yes. There was a whole lot of propagating going on.
and that's only the first wave of the
yeah,
Scythian New
right, York. Right, right. And, you know, and there was plenty of food. There was plenty of shelter. You mentioned earlier that Europe was just a gigantic swamp, right? Well, they built houses on stilts, okay? And they lived in the swamp because the Roman soldiers couldn't get at them while they lived on these stilt houses. I forget what the technical term is. The archaeologists have a name for those houses. But, building platforms on stilts and turning those into houses. They kept them safe from the Romans. Okay? But as our population exploded, we became a major nuisance to the Roman Empire. And, of course, we sacked Rome. Okay? Verse 22. Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will lift up my hand to the nations and set up my standard to the people. And they shall bring your sons in their arms, and your daughters shall be carried upon their shoulders.
And this is speaking in reference to the nations which Israel took captive,
mm-hmm.
that it would be turned around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, verse 23.
And it was in history.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
the Diodorus Siculus attests that the Scythians took slaves of entire tribes of the Assyrians and the Medes
mm-hmm.
across the Caucasus Mountains with them.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, compensation is fair play. Yes, and then our people, because of our population explosion, wherever we went, we became the winners over our former oppressors. Yes, and that's going to happen one more time, folks. Verse 23, and kings shall be your nursing fathers and their queens your nursing mothers. And it's not true of the Jews, folks. They don't have any kings and queens. They shall bow down to you with their face toward the earth and lick up the dust of your feet, and you shall know that I am Yahweh, for they shall not be ashamed that wait for me. We're not ashamed of the Old Testament God, Yahweh, folks. Verse 24.
And what this also, think, I mean, we have to wait for Babylon to fall. We
mm-hmm.
have to wait for the hand of our God to intervene.
Yes.
And
yes.
we shall not be ashamed.
That's right.
And a lot of people might mock us for saying, oh, no, we got to do it now. We got to do this ourselves,
right.
blah, 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 blah. Well, that's just human
yeah.
bravado, Steve.
No, we can't. We're too weak, as the international banking mafia has total control of virtually every military operation on the planet.
Well,
we have to wait for it to crumble of its own corruption. That's when we make our move.
And that's exactly what's going to happen.
That's right. Verse 24. Shall the prey be taken from the mighty, or the lawful captive delivered? But thus says Yahweh, even the captives of the mighty shall be taken away, and the prey of the terrible shall be delivered. For I will contend with him that contends with you, and will save your children.
He did it then, and he's going
he's to
do
it again. Yeah.
And the word terrible means fearsome or awesome.
Yes. Okay. Verse 26, and I'm going to finish this chapter, and I'm going to switch to W.G. Finlay's interpretation of Genesis 49 for comparison, and we can discuss this. Verse 26, and I will feed them that oppress you with their own flesh, and they shall be drunken with their own blood as with sweet wine, and all flesh shall know that I am Yahweh, your Savior and your Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. Okay.
And I would say that this was surely, yeah, you know, this actually probably happened at the time
mm-hmm.
with the sieges of Nineveh and Babylon. Well, we can expect it to happen again in this
right,
age.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the Scythians it was that destroyed Nineveh.
Yes.
That's okay. The capital city of the Assyrians.
Yeah. Let me quote now W.G. Finlay's interpretation of chapter 49. Okay. This is from the 1979 issue of the Covenant Message. And let's see if I can find
it. I hope it's Isaiah 49 because you would mention Genesis a minute ago.
Did I say Genesis? I said that by mistake.
I'm taking on you.
Yeah. Action and Reaction is the title of the article. W.G. Finlay. Page 13 here. It would, of course, be most surprising if the sure word of prophecy, which has been most efficacious in pinpointing other features in Israel's modern history, had nothing to say about the repercussions arising from the nation's interference in realms where it had no business. Okay? And I think he's referring to colonization and the various colonies of the Israelite nations aiding and abetting the non-Israelite people there. Okay? And this is what he's referring to. Continuing, one realizes, of course, that there are those who contend that prophecy can be made to say just about anything, but ignoring the skeptical, attention is focused on the writing of Isaiah, who presents a picture of the children of Isaiah, of Israel, in relation to others who are simply called thy destroyers. Okay? And I'm not sure which verse he's quoting. I don't recall that expression, thy destroyers. Was that one of these last verses here in chapter 49?
I don't think so.
Okay, anyway, these destroyers are spoken of in such a sense as to convey the notion that the colonial aspect of the British Empire, for in Isaiah 49:17, they are mentioned as going forth of thee, which is certainly suggestive of the association as it was in the days of empire. Okay.
Oh, yes, it says thy destroyers in 49.
Okay, all right. So he's suggesting that now, of course, the British Empire was fueled by Jewish money and Jewish ambition.
Yeah, but this is talking about thy children shall make haste, thy destroyers, and they that made thee waste
mm-hmm.
shall go forth of thee. And in historical context,
mm-hmm.
this is talking about the Assyrians who came into Israel and destroyed it and carried away the Israelites.
Okay, okay. Now, as continuing here, as the history of the past 20 years indicates, and of course he's referring to his own country, South Africa, all the countries which were formerly part and parcel of the British Empire, having gone forth or having obtained their independence, have returned and are now constituent parts of the Commonwealth, which holds the key to British politics today. If one continues with Isaiah's writing, in point of fact, the very next verse to that which indicates the independence of the colonies, it will be seen that the events which gave birth to the modern Commonwealth are graphically described. So he's relating these passages in Isaiah 49 to the British Commonwealth. Quote, lift up thine eyes round about, and behold, all these gather themselves together and come to thee. As I live, saith Yahweh, thou shalt surely clothe thee with them all, as with an ornament, and bind them on thee as a bride doeth, at verse 18. If this is not a picture of today, then all that can be said is that it is a remarkable parallel, as it is the next step in this prophecy which deals with the claims of these liberated people. The place, Hebrew Mekoma, locality, country, or home, is too straight, Hebrew tsar, T-S-A-R, small, tight, narrow, or cramped, for me. Give place to me that I may dwell. Of course, we were talking at length about the dispersion and the Lebensraum of our people Israel.
Well, right, but I think that Finley's making the great mistake of the British Israel people to imagine that the English alone are Israel.
Right, right, and this is kind of, I never figured Finlay as a British Israel type, but yes, you're right.
Well, Finlay, he's not a Dutch South African.
Okay, right.
What was that name?
Right, the Boer. He's not a Boer, yeah. This statement could be taken in two ways. The first could have to do with the population explosion in Africa and the land's inability to cope with it, while the second could be the demands made by those who had already migrated to the Isles and found themselves restricted by an already prodigious population. I think that's the context we were speaking about, that our own population explosion caused our people to keep migrating.
Well, right, and yes. That happened when the children of Israel were taken to the cities of the Medes.
Right, right, yeah, and of course in the European dispersion, and until recently this has been our history. Yeah, continuous migration, continuous population explosion. Whichever way one may look at it, the end result is the same, namely that Israel in the Isles finds themselves desolate and captive and moving to and fro, okay?
And let me just say that he takes this word, the British Israel people do this all the time.
Okay.
They take this word Isles literally.
Yeah.
And it
right.
really means British coastland.
Right.
And since, you know, since highways were, since the rivers and the waterways were the ancient highways,
mm-hmm.
people congregated around the coastlands.
Yes.
If you look at the settlement patterns, all our major cities, they're all on big rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And Las Vegas is an exception, right? And there's a few railroad towns that grew pretty large. But before those railroad towns, all of our major cities were on big rivers.
Right.
They had to be.
Yes.
Or else they couldn't do any trade.
They were either seaport cities or river cities, no doubt. Absolutely. Yes, yes. Okay. Continues here. What then is the answer? Thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will lift up mine hand to the nations and set up mine standard to the people. In the following chapter, it will, he's quoting verse 22 of chapter 49. In the following chapter, it will be seen that the Lord's hand is set in motion to deliver his people, Isaiah 52, while the standard referred to is mentioned in Isaiah 51:4 as his law. The law of Yahweh is, of course, a cleansing mechanism. And if Isaiah 13:14 has any credence in this context, it would appear that they shall every man turn to his own people and flee everyone to his own land. Of course, Yahshua Messiah says exactly that in Matthew chapter 25, I believe starting with verse 31.
I'm trying to pick out his interpretation of the word Gentiles here in verse 22.
Okay. Well, I think he means it in the old-fashioned sense. Which has led to his delusion on Paul, okay? In fact, there's no doubt in my mind that he's interpreting that way. He doesn't see Gentiles as dispersed Israelites exclusively as we do, right? Now, one more statement here. If this is so and the explanation given above is correct, Africa will be faced with a tremendous problem of overpopulation and underproduction. Will the 26th verse of Isaiah 49 answer this situation? Quote, and I will feed them that oppress thee with their own flesh, cannibalism is how he interprets this, and they shall be drunken with their own blood as with sweet wine, and all flesh shall know that I, Yahweh, am thy Savior, of course, meaning Jacob Israel, and thy Redeemer, and the Mighty One of Jacob. So, I mean, I can see this, because when the population explosion, because their population explosion is still continuing, okay? But as the economy collapses and food production is extremely reduced, we're going to see major starvation planet-wide. Our people would do well to anticipate this and prepare for it, but the rest of the world is going to be caught totally off guard, and you will see cannibalism among the rest of the people of this planet. I guarantee it, okay?
Well, there's never been a natural state of overpopulation and underproduction amongst our people.
That's right.
I don't know of one case.
Yeah.
The only case I know is Ireland and the famine. However, that was forced on them by British policy.
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
It had nothing to do with the Irish. It was no fault of the Irish.
Yes, yes, yes. So verse 26 is I think he's got verse 26 correct. Let me repeat it here. And I will feed them that oppress you. He's talking about our enemies, okay? And it's primarily the international Jew and all the people that he has gathered unto himself and heaped to himself and using them against us as our oppressors, okay? Whether they're doing this willingly or not, he's using the other races to oppress us. Absolutely no doubt about this, okay? And they shall be, and I will feed them that oppress you with their own flesh. We can take this literally, folks. And they shall be drunken with their own blood, as with sweet wine, and all flesh shall know that I, Yahweh, am your Savior and your Redeemer, the Mighty One of Israel. We're going to be seeing these blacks and Mexicans, and probably Arabs too, in our nations, when the economies totally collapse, they're going to engage in cannibalism. So we better stay out of the way.
Well, the Arabs would eat their daughters and save the goats for sex.
Right. Right. Okay.
They love their goats.
Yes, yes. Chapter, is that why they put veils over their faces? I'm sorry, folks. I shouldn't have said that. Chapter 50, verse 1. Thus saith Yahweh, where is the bill of your mother's divorcement, whom I have put away? Or which of my creditors is it to whom I have sold you? Behold, for your iniquities have you sold yourselves, and for your transgressions is your mother put away.
And this again proves that only Israel is redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the entire meaning of redemption is the idea of buying back what you have sold, or
right,
or buying back what you've lost.
That's right.
Yet the Jews have no such sense of alienation from their God.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They don't.
Why do they never discuss any of this?
Yes, that's because, well, because these prophecies don't apply to them. That's why.
Well, right. That's my exact point.
Right.
Why don't Christians see this? Because their pastors tell them that this doesn't matter anything.
Right. Right. Exactly. They're New Testament Christians. Right. Verse 2. Why, when I came, was there no man? When I called, was there none to answer? Is my hand shortened at all that it cannot redeem? Or have I no power to deliver? Behold, at my rebuke, I dry up the sea. I make the rivers a wilderness. Their fish stinks because there is no water and dies for thirst. You know, Yahweh is allowing this oil spill to happen because our people, in transgressing his law, deserve it.
Well, we have to understand it. He's in control, and
right,
it's only going to go as far as he wants it to.
That's right. He's going to continue to chastise us until we awaken. Verse 3, I clothe the heavens with blackness, and I make sackcloth their covering. And folks, the day will come when the sun won't shine. It's going to get so bad. Verse 4, and Yahweh Elohim has given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. And we are weary. Those of us in identity are definitely weary of all this, praying for change, praying for deliverance. He wakens morning by morning. He wakens my ear to hear as the learned. Yahweh Elohim has opened my ear, and I was not rebellious, neither turned away back. So there are those Israelites among us who have not rebelled, that we are willing to listen. Verse 6.
Now, this is Jacob speaking again.
Right.
Same rhetorical conversation.
Yeah, speaking on our behalf. Yes. Verse 6. I gave my back to the smiters and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting. And we're taking it, folks. We're being slapped around. We're being spat upon. We're being ridiculed. We're called the evil white man. We're the racists of the world, right? The new niggers of the world are white racists. Verse 7, for Yahweh Elohim will help me. Therefore shall I not be confounded. Therefore have I set my face like a flint, and I know that I shall not be ashamed. We have to steel ourselves for what's getting ready to happen. We will not be confounded. Folks, these words of prophecy tell us exactly what's going to happen. We know Yahweh always delivers on his promises. Verse 8, he is near that justifies me. Who will contend with me? Let us stand together. Who is my adversary? Let him come near to me.
Now Jacob's talking about his own adversaries, not the adversaries of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
It's we have to take that in context.
Yes.
He's not talking about the Jews.
Right, right. Okay, yes. Verse 9, behold, Yahweh Elohim will help me. Paul says, if God be with us, who can be against us? Who is he that shall condemn me? Lo, they all shall wax old as a garment. The moth shall eat them up. Who is among you that fears Yahweh, that obeys the voice of his servant, that walks in darkness and has no light? Let him trust in the name of Yahweh and stay upon his Elohim. Final verse here, verse 11. Behold, all of you that kindle a fire, that compass yourselves about with sparks, walk in the light of your fire and in the sparks that you have kindled. This shall you have of my hand. You shall lie down in sorrow. Okay. What's verse 11?
Well, I think it's here, you know, behold, all you that kindle a fire,
mm-hmm,
and compasses. In other words, all of those who take up the torch too soon.
Okay.
Try to resist Yahweh's will.
Uh-huh.
We'll lie down in sorrow.
Okay.
But
yeah,
we have to understand what his will is for us.
Right.
And abide by it and live by it.
Yes.
And you know where I found many parallels in Ephesians chapters 3 and 4, well, with the earlier verses of Isaiah, I mean the earlier chapters here of Isaiah,
uh-huh,
42 through 46, here I find a great parallel between this chapter and Ephesians chapter 6,
okay,
where Paul talks about the full armor of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Jacob, he's drawing the same mental picture here, that you know, Yahweh will be his protection.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and we have to have that kind of faith in our Creator / Redeemer. If we don't, and you know, the only way we can truly appreciate what he has done for us up to this point is by reading these scriptures and understanding how, you know, there are numerous times where he has saved our people from total destruction. Total destruction. And we only bring it on ourselves when destruction is near. It's only because we have failed to abide by his laws, that failed to abide by his ways, that our people suffer. It's really that simple, folks. If we simply would obey his law, we wouldn't be suffering. And so,
well, we're responsible for World Wars I and II because we've embraced the enemies of our God.
Right, right, yeah. And British Israel, I mean, makes a huge mistake in suggesting that the British were righteous and the Germans were evil during World Wars I and II. On the contrary, the British were the partners of the satanic Jews in both of those conflicts, okay? And you know, there's simply no doubt about it. They have allowed the Rothschilds to totally dominate their economy, their military endeavors. I mean, their invasion against the Boer people is absolutely scandalous. I mean, I don't have words to suggest how evil it was for the British people to go in and simply start exterminating those Dutch and German Boers.
Well, you know, the Jews had basically come to rule in Holland through their banks before they did England.
Uh-huh.
And I see the Boers as Dutchmen that got out from under the heel of the Jews.
Right.
And the Jews paid them back.
Yes.
With the Boer Wars.
Right, right, right. And then also the British Empire in fomenting the Boxer Rebellion by hooking all those Chinamen on cocaine, or opium rather, right? And the British Empire's involvement in India, pitting the Muslims and the Hindus against one another. I mean, none of these things can possibly be considered to be positive or good or right or just. Okay?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, and it was all instigated by the Jews within the British Empire.
And where's the empire now?
Yes. Okay. So we Americans better wake up, because if we don't get back to Yahweh's law, which is the only solution to our problems, is getting back to Yahweh's law. Come out of Babylon, practice the true religion, the gospel of Jesus Christ, that he has come to redeem us, and that we act accordingly. That's the only solution, folks.
And stop embracing the enemies of
right.
our God and all of their little trinkets and distractions
right.
and things that they sell us.
Right, right. Turn in your plastic credit cards.
Right. They've got to go.
Yeah, it's all got to go. Come out of Babylon. We've simply got to disengage from this beast system that is the world economy, you know. And you will be blessed as you do this. You will be blessed as you disengage from this awful exploitative economy, you know, which is destroying the white race. It totally is destroying. You know, temporarily, it's feeding the non-whites of the planet, but that's going to end real soon, too, because this economy, the world economy, is collapsing. There's nothing anybody can do to save it, and so we need to prepare ourselves, you know, and get our, you know, sanctuaries out in the country and various other places, okay, and pray for Yahweh's protection. So before we go into chapter 51, which is a fairly long chapter, let's conclude on that note. And tomorrow, what, we have chapters 5 and 6 of Ephesians left?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll conclude the book of Ephesians. And then Sunday I'm going to have another show about the economy. And so looking forward to both those shows tomorrow and Sunday. Thank you very much, William Fink, for joining me again this evening. Praise Yahweh, and see you tomorrow.
Praise Yahweh.
Okay. Yahweh bless everybody.